The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day six, actually most of the way through day six, of this seven-day sesshin in January 2017. Here at Mountain Gate in northern New Mexico, where it is snowing a funny, very wet snow that keeps rolling off the roof and plopping down with great booms. It's interesting, the weather. It's been interesting, the weather during the sesshin in general. It's been warmer and cooler, it's been sunny, it's been snowing, it's been raining. It's been doing all kinds of things, just like our mind. Our mind is filled with all sorts of things, thoughts, ideas, feelings, assumptions, dreams, memories, snatches of songs. And just like the weather, they come and they go. They come and they go. They come and they go. But what's beneath it all? What's underneath all that coming and going in our mind? I'd like to share a few words of Anyen Rinpoche, a Tibetan Buddhist teacher. From a book called Momentary Buddhahood, Mindfulness and the Vajrayana Path. Momentary Buddhahood. There's a saying in Zen, one moment of Zazen, one moment of Buddha. Of course, that's a level of Zazen. On the other hand, Buddhahood doesn't depend on anything, because we are already endowed with everything we need. We are already that perfect being, filled with compassion and wisdom. It's only because of the weather of our mind that we miscalculate this and assume otherwise. So, Anyen Rinpoche, this is in a chapter titled Examining the Body-Mind Connection Through Mindful Self-Reflection. Usually when we think about the word Dharma, this is Dharma with a capital D, we think about teachings that someone gives or texts that examine the methods for different kinds of practice. But really, the true Dharma that we need to understand is that of the mind itself. We need to relate to our own minds. This is real Dharma. Being in a position to practice Dharma at all and then having the supreme good fortune to encounter it is a very rare and precious thing. It's very easy to become the mere reflection of a Dharma practitioner, but to become a Dharma practitioner who has all of the perfect conditions available to support his or her practice is a very difficult thing to do. And yet, the fact that each of you is sitting here in this sesshin on day six speaks to the fact that you already have those conditions available to you in your life, and you're taking advantage of them, which is pretty terrific. We ought to reflect on the fact that we have at least some positive supports for Dharma practice. What good fortune we've had so far. But the extent to which we use these supports to actually practice is really up to us. We also need faith and the will to practice. It's important to examine the relationship between the body and the mind. For example, in this lifetime, the body and mind have an intimate connection. The idea of ego or the concept of self is created by each person's mind. Now this is fundamental, very, very important. The idea of ego or the concept of self is created by each person's mind. The idea and experience of self-attachment are also created by the mind. From beginningless time, our minds have engaged in self-grasping. Even though our bodies have changed in form and appearance over time, we have always perceived ourselves in a fixed and lasting relationship with a particular body during a particular lifetime. And, of course, we assume a lot of things about that body and that mind. We're good looking, we're not. We're old, we're young. We've got to get this in our life or we won't be happy. We got to get rid of that or we won't be happy. If only, then we'd be happy. And yet that happiness lies within us. It doesn't have to be dependent. Not true happiness. True happiness is not dependent on outward circumstances. I recently watched a video given by a psychologist, a talk, in which he speaks about people living lives of dissatisfaction because they're always seeking something to make themselves happy. If only I had this, then I'll really be happy. If only I had that, then I'll really be happy. A long, 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 long time ago, back in the early 1970s, when I was a professional interior designer, commercial interior designer, doing banks, office buildings, offices, that kind of thing, a new catalog came into my office and I was leafing through it so that I could become familiar with the contents. And there were some pretty beautiful things in there, this furniture catalog. And I came upon a page where there were some really wonderful chairs. They were side chairs. They were chairs that would go around a dining room table. And at the time I had a Saarinen table, it's a familiar pedestal table that was popular at one time, actually designed by the architect Eero Saarinen. It was a very elegant table, and it could use those chairs. They would have looked perfect with it. And I thought, I should buy these chairs. I had enough money to do it, besides which I'd get a 50% discount. And our lifestyle was such that it would fit. But immediately the next thought, as some of you already know, was, sure, go ahead and get those chairs. How long do you think it will be before the joy of having those chairs fades and there's something else that you really, really, really want to have? And then after that, if you get it, how long before there's something yet more that you really, really want to have? And I realized that it was an endless train full of wanting, getting, disappointment, wanting more, getting, wanting more, getting, wanting more, maybe not getting, and that I didn't want to live that way. And if I didn't want to live that way, I had to get off that train right then. And so I never bought the chairs. That was a very pivotal experience for me because realizing that there was nothing outside of myself that would make me lastingly happy was at the core of that experience. And so it made me willing to go inward for many, many years and face many, many challenging things in my mind, in order to become free. And I would not have stuck it out if I hadn't had that pre-Zazen experience, where I did realize without a doubt that there was nothing that was going to make me lastingly happy. No possession, no person, no event, nothing. But somewhere there was a sense that there was something within me that was precious and needed to be returned to, that I'd lost contact with. And so for 42 years I've been doing Zazen. The secret lies in our own mind. As I said in an earlier Taisho, our practice is really about exploring our mind, getting to know how it works, searching out how things come up, and tracing them down to the root. A venerable Korean master from centuries ago said, "Trace down the radiance to its source. Trace down the radiance to its source." And if we use the ladder, so to speak, of the thoughts or ideas or images to go down, that's a good part of the work. It's important to ignore things that would come up that would obstruct us. Now, there's something that needs to be said around this. All of you here at this particular sesshin have worked a great deal, very hard on yourselves. And so you're at a place where it is safe to ignore things that come up that would distract you. You don't try to push them away, and this is important. We don't use the practice to avoid. We don't use the practice to squash. We don't use the practice to dissociate. We don't use the practice to do as John Wellwood, a psychologist who's a long time Zen practitioner, says in his book, doing an end run around our issues. If something does come up that's sticky, turn and face it, acknowledge it, and, you know, hello, how are you? Okay, now I'm back to what I really need to do. You can have a chair. I'll be with you one of these days, if you're still around. And then we go back to the deeper search. And that includes everything, because as part of practice, until we reach a certain point in our practice, things will come up, will create things to come up. Now, this is different from traumatic memories, but in general, we will create things to distract ourselves from the practice. And this is how we deal with it. Turn, acknowledge, go back to the practice and take it even deeper. If you're having difficulty with sticky thoughts, really let that breath be drawn out far. Reach, reach, reach through that out-breath, through the clarity that comes at the bottom of the out-breath. Open to that clarity further. See if you can see more of that picture. Except it's not really a picture, it's more reality than picture. There's a lot in the Zen literature, a lot of stories of Zen monks going to great odds to overcome their attachments. As one master, Chinese master, was known as the bird's nest master because he used to sit zazen in a tree. Because if he sat zazen in a tree, he would have to be quite aware all the time. He couldn't sort of go to sleep on his practice or get distracted, or he would fall out of the tree and break something. There's another master that used to sit on the edge of the well for the same reasons. If he wasn't absolutely alert, he'd fall into the well. I tried to imitate that at one point early in my practice at the Rochester Zen Center by doing yaza at the top of the stairs in 7AP, and it didn't work very well. For one thing, there were always people coming up and down the stairs, so there was a lot of stuff going on, and I finally gave up and worked on it in other ways. But there is something precious that you can open to if you ignore the distractions. And the distractions can include, I gotta practice this way. Otherwise, it won't work. I gotta practice that way. Otherwise, it won't work. Be careful. Be careful. Be careful. I'd like to share with you some more of Richard Wehrman's poetry from his book, Light Was Everywhere. These poems all pretty much point to something that's important. Here's one called The Music. Oh, the dance. My fear and my joy are doing this amazing dance. Fear wants to flee. But joy grabs her hand and swings her around. See, joy cries. The more we whirl and spin, the more we turn into something new. Fear jumps in. Oh, I'm so good at running fast, she says. Now they whirl together like atom and electron. Look, it's magic. Light is pouring out. This one is called Wide Open Window. Sitting this morning with the full moon, unable to sleep. The moon moving slowly past the locust budding branches, humid but clear, out the open window. Spring peepers at 3 a.m., starting and stopping, and my mind, free from fear, so unexpectedly empty and at peace. It's a wonderful expression of yaza. Sitting this morning with the full moon, unable to sleep. The moon moving slowly past the locust budding branches. Humid but clear out the open window, spring peepers at 3 a.m., starting and stopping. And my mind, free from fear, so unexpectedly empty and at peace. As we go deeply into our practice, we can have that same experience. And my mind, free from fear, so unexpectedly empty and at peace. I remember you. The long December walks in tall dry grass and weeds along the railroad tracks. the abandoned spikes, iron, cold and rusty, in the winter sun, the bone-white skull abandoned by the barbed-linked fence, fine-boned mummy fur, a tapestry of wonder in a blessed body. You were there, crunching underfoot among the stones and broken glass between the ties, in the thistle's spiny husk, the drift of milkweed, in the faceted red depth of a broken piece of plastic. You held me in your fierce kiss, that white-hot wind burning into me, fur pulled tight around my ears, there as we walked, as we examined the nooks and crannies of the world, as I fell away from who I never was anyway. And it was only us, we without a name, gloriously alive. As I fell away from who I never was anyway, and it was only us, we without a name, gloriously alive. The only thing about that poem is there's no me and the other. Us is one. Gloriously alive. And dependent on, as I fell away from who I never was anyway. When we forget ourselves, that's when we can become truly alive. Dogen, the great Zen master Dogen, considered to be the founder of the Soto sect in Japan, on coming back from China, beginning to teach, at one point he said, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to become enlightened by the 10,000 things. To become enlightened by the 10,000 things is to remove the barrier between self and other. This is to study the way is to study the self. Explore that mind. And in the process of it, forget that self. Exploring so completely, so deeply, so curiously. Riding the breath out again and again and again. This is when we can become enlightened by the 10,000 things, because the barriers are removed between any idea of self and any idea of other. So keep digging, keep dropping, keep diving into this wondrous exploration. Thank you for listening, and we'll stop now and recite the four vows.